it's easier to teach those challenges and teach through those conversations when it's $150 versus $50,000 car that they bought that they shouldn't have. So I really like that idea. It's always stuck with me to let children, when they're able to, handle a certain category of the budget.
Welcome to Give a Heck. I am your host, Dwight Heck, and for much of my life, lived my life in quiet desperation, wondering how I was going to pay the bills, take vacations, save for retirement, and one day wondering if I would get off the hamster wheel of life and have purpose. A life that most of society lives, which takes us to work, then home, then repeat, and pays us hopefully enough just to survive. The harsh truth that most live with more month than money and have no idea how to live life on purpose, not by accident. This ensures the mass majority are living not just financially broke, however emotionally and mentally as well due to financial pressures. In each episode, I will introduce you to thoughts, ideas, and guests that can help you to learn how you too can live life on purpose, not by accident.
Good day and welcome to Give a Heck. On today's show, I welcome Skylar Fleming. Skylar found his love for personal finance a few years ago when he started working for a local credit union. Throughout the years, he started researching feverishly, continuing to seek more financial knowledge. He found the primary reason people struggle with money is that there is not enough conversation around it. Skylar quickly learned more about money than he was ever taught just by helping other people through conversation and shared knowledge. Through this helped him develop a true passion to help teach people about money. The biggest result is that it led him to become a financial coach and eventually the host of Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I'd like to welcome you to the show, Skylar. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on and share with us some of your life journey.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited for this conversation.
Yeah, so am I. I'm looking forward to it too. It's nice to talk to people that have a passion and a desire to learn and always be on the, you know, the climb to, you know, not have mental, their clarity die. They just literally are camped in their mindset. You're a person that wants to learn more about money and the money game and then ensure that others are the same, that they have that ability to know, because really at the end of the day, money is the number one cause of strife in the world.
Yeah, wars, it's true.
Wars happen over money. Everything happens over money, right?
Yeah. Money's at the root of, honestly, it impacts everything in our lives. Like whether you like it or not, it's going to have something's going to pop up around money with every decision you make.
Yeah. And money doesn't have a personality, right? It's the personality of the person that wields it, right? So you can do good with money. You can do bad with money. But at the end of the day, if you don't understand the consequences of the lack of money or too much money in regards to taxation and what it can do to you, it can cause a lot of emotional strife within an individual, a family, a group, and it causes people to be driven toward addictions. It's really at the end of the day, congratulations on being somebody that wanted to learn and wants to continue to learn and educate others about money, because so many people just turn a blind eye to it and they stay in that camp mindset and their lives just disintegrate around it, right? And it's something that can be fixed.
Yeah, it's something that we can all address. And that's my whole thing is just talking about it, but it impacts everyone. You got to figure it out sooner or later, or else, like you said, your life's just going to seemingly like crumble in small little ways. You're going to find yourself in debt or this, that, and the other, but we got to learn about it at some point.
Yeah. It's the hamster wheel of life effect. Go to work, go home, get paid, wait for the weekends. Friday comes, you're excited. Saturday evening, you're sad because tomorrow is Sunday and you know you got to go back to work Monday. That's not life. That's not what God, the God I believe in, wanted for any of us. He wanted us to fulfill a purpose to serve humankind and help up-level it. Along the process, though, we got to make sure we're correcting our own, you know, indiscretions and lack of knowledge and leveling ourselves up. So one of the things I start off with, Skylar, with is a person's origin story, right? I feel that's so important for those listening or watching to be able to connect to you by you sharing your earliest recollections from childhood, some vulnerable moments, if you have any that you feel comfortable enough sharing, obviously, all the way to where you're up to today. So could you please share me your origin story, Skylar?
Yeah. So thinking about this, the first thing that comes to my mind is my childhood home and my parents going through bankruptcy and us moving out of that home and into my grandparents, and often seeing my parents, I guess, need money or borrow money from my grandparents stuck in my mind, or it sticks in my mind pretty strongly. And I think that's one of the things that drives me towards self-reliance and financial independence. But I guess back to the beginning, that's some of the initial things I remember, is just stuff not being, I guess, there all the time or needing help from other people in order to afford stuff. One of the first memories I will always go back to get people thinking is that I always remember my parents never filling up the tank of gas, and they could pay at the pump with card or cash, but they would always just send us in with a $20 bill or something like that to put on the pump instead of paying for a full tank of gas or something like that. And that stuck with me in the fact that I now have been able to recognize that I always want to make sure I have enough to fill up my car. I always want to make sure I have enough to get fuel to where I need to go, because of that early impression of, hey, money is scarce. So we need to make sure we can only use so much to get where we need to go and stuff like that. And that's something I never wanted to run into. So that's one of my earliest stories that I think impacted me directly in terms of how I save or spend money and some of the targets I go for.
Well, that's interesting to hear. Like I've heard this from many people, obviously being in the finance world as a financial planner and lifestyle coach for 21 years, I hear it all. And literally the thing that breaks down for most people is they make excuses for it. So if their child asks them, why are you only filling up half a tank? That, you know, I see my friends or other family, they fill it up all the way. You know, I've heard the wickedest excuses. We don't even need to get into what it is, yeah. But it teaches a pattern of learned behavior to that child, just like the learned behavior you talked about with your, you know, losing the childhood home and your parents struggling and having to borrow money. At the end of the day, children are very understanding and resilient if we give them the opportunity to teach them, right, that there's not always enough in life. Right? That sometimes you're going to struggle. Sometimes things aren't a need, right? They're a want, so we can't do it. And it's terrible, really, at the end of the day, how easily it is that we could fix things for, you know, the next generation, and then that passed down to the next generation. But, you know, some of the things that we're going to discuss that I want to ask you about, too, is your opinion in regards to, you know, education and some of the processes that you've learned through your passion. And again, now it makes more sense because of your origin, why you were, you know, become a warrior wanting to protect humankind, mankind, yeah. and their knowledge.
Yeah. And that's definitely the thing that sticks with me from my childhood. And I think in regards to teaching children, that having those conversations of saying, hey, our vehicle's being repossessed, let us tell you why. Like, it's not fun. It's a hard thing. But being open, I think, like you said, it'll allow us to train the next generation to avoid those issues. It's like, hey, maybe we got in over our head a little bit with too much debt or something like that. And I think that's where conversations that are, I guess, age appropriate or that are catered to the right age can be extremely helpful towards at least planting thoughts in someone's mind, because I don't know if I really recall a whole lot of financial conversations as a kid, but that could also lead to not having those conversations. And now I find myself getting my first car as an adult, and I don't have any idea about, like, what is an interest rate? What is a loan? What is the monthly payment? And how does that impact my budget and things like that? And that's where those simple conversations can at least plant a seed in someone's mind to get them thinking about it when they do ultimately face the decisions down the road.
Well, you're correct. You brought up a valid point, planting the seed, because there's, even if we plant a seed in a child, or let's say we're educating adults that didn't have that, they have that lack of money knowledge, knowing the rules of the money game. And I plant that seed, whether it was in my children or it's in adults, it's up to them to carpe diem. They need to seize the day and need to water that seed by accessing more information. And unfortunately, back when I was your age, there wasn't a lot of information that was easily accessible. Yes, you could go to the library, you could take out books, you could get magazines on money, but really there was no real education surrounding money. The school system was lacking, still is lacking. It hasn't changed this many years later. But unfortunately, that lack of knowledge doesn't have to be that way. Those listening or watching today, there's a plethora of information that's out there. But I will preface that with the fact that though there's a plethora of information, there's also something that the internet and technology has done for us. It allows information to be manipulated in the wrong way too. So when you do read stuff online, when you do watch a YouTube video, go just like if you got a disease or you're really ill, you might go get a second opinion from another doctor. Do the same with information, whether it's finance or not finance. You know, this is just helpful information to those listening or watching. Don't believe the first thing you read or listen to, right?
Yeah, I even say that on my show. I'm like, this should not be your only source of financial information. There's so many things out there you need to compare and contrast.
Well, that's exactly why I wanted you on the show. When I seen that you were interested in being on, I was like, wow, this would be cool to have this guy on and get his opinion and his thoughts. And then to find out, you know, that your age category, right, takes you right below for those listening and watching. Skylar is 25 years old, so he's right below the threshold of what a millennial is. So his thought process is going to be different even than a millennial. It's going to be different than the X generation. It's going to be different than the baby boomers. It's going to be different than what they call, I'm trying to think now, the generation above the baby boomers. I just had a brain fart. But you know what? Everybody has different thought processes. Everybody has different challenges. But at the end of the day, we all have the same lack of money knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. So it's good that you and I are having this conversation. So Skylar, you developed a passion for finance at a very young age. As you would say, you did a ton of research. I loved reading that.
Yeah.
Right? My son says that a lot too. It's just, again, generational. We have different phrases, different ways that we communicate. None of it's bad. Mm-hmm. It just makes us all unique, right? Yeah. So I appreciated reading that. Where did you start that journey and what did it look like? Was it mostly reading, listening, workshops, conferences? You know, what was your biggest influence?
Yeah, lots and lots of YouTube videos and podcasts, which I think comes from my age. That's my go-to for content and things like that. So lots of listening to other podcasts, listening to people on YouTube, watching their videos, their tutorials on what is investing, what are the different elements of it. Just as like we've talked about, things would get planted in my mind from my job at the call center. I would hear something that maybe someone was struggling with. I'd go look it up and I'd learn from other people at the call center, supervisors and things like that, on how the situation can be helped. And then I'd do a little bit more research on it. How do I avoid getting in that situation? Things like that. But really just a ton of listening and watching stuff on the internet.
So are you a person that takes notes when you do that sort of stuff, or are you able to retain a lot?
I don't retain anything. My saying is, I don't remember anything because I don't try to. Like I put it all down. I'm a very, very much a second brain enthusiast, if people know that term and stuff. I love to take notes, put notes in places, document things like that. So yeah, definitely a note taker.
That's good, because those that are listening, taking notes has been proven that the actual art of taking the notes and writing down what you're listening to or watching actually will stick in your brain way better, right? And it helps you interpret and understand what you're ingesting for information. Again, whether it's watching and listening or just listening. So notes is a great thing. I do it myself. And notes don't have to be super long. It can be a bullet point, because our mind absorbs everything. It records everything. So a bullet point is like an index, just like when you go click on a file on your computer, it's indexed to where the data is stored. Well, for us, it's not that file name you're seeing on the screen or on your phone. It's literally a bullet point that you read and go, ooh, I remember that part of the conversation, right? So don't be fearful of note-taking. I hear people say, that's way too much work. Well, not really. I take a few bullet points. I can go back and look a podcast from 2 years ago and read the bullet points. And it's like, oh, I remember that. Oh, I remember that. Yeah. I don't even have to go listen to the podcast because our brains,
note taking is fun.
Yeah. Our brains are amazing, right? We just need to learn how to access it easily, right? Yeah. Especially as we age, those thoughts don't come forward as easily without having that index of that note. So I appreciate you saying that. Who would be your biggest influence that you appreciate in regards to the financial education you've learned thus far and still are learning?
Oh, that's I could think of several podcasts, like the big ones, like Money Guy Show, Stacking Benjamins. Dave Ramsey was definitely my intro to personal finance, and I was huge on Dave Ramsey at the beginning, and then I stepped into the waters of the other shows out there and learned more and more. So I'd say those big podcasts that I think people know of, or when you search top financial podcasts and stuff, those would be the main people I've looked to. And honestly, I'd also add all the people I talked to when I was working at the credit union as an influence, because there were so many different, like, money is so individual. There's so many different stories and conversations that I was able to have with all those different people, where every little situation, sure, during COVID, we were doing a ton of loan deferrals and things like that, but everyone's story was slightly different. And that's just what's so fascinating about money, is that it's the same thing. Like, we all have the same $1 bill, $5 bill, and things like that, but the meaning that it has to everyone is so different.
Well, two of the things I keyed on was you advanced yourself. I'm quite familiar with Dave Ramsey, right? And there's nothing against Dave Ramsey, but you have to look, if you listen to more than one podcast, people that are listening or watching that is finance-based, you will quickly outgrow Dave Ramsey really quick, right? Mm-hmm. Again, he's a great starter, but he's very fixated and he's stuck within a box. He doesn't, you know, his Jars principle and all the other things that he teaches, it actually, to me, it holds people back. It doesn't push them to take any risk, very conservative risk tolerance. And I get where he's coming from. He's got millions of people that have followed his advice and have helped them. But most of the people that I reach that are clients, that become my clients, or I go do workshops and people will come up and say that, because Dave Ramsey's been famous for going to a lot of churches over the years, right? He gets invited to speak to the congregations and stuff. And I'll talk to people, and their financial ability to stretch themselves has been diminished because they're living in fear. That's not what life's about, right? Again, I'm not an anti-Dave Ramsey. I just think there's so much people that can help you beyond that. So always be willing to stretch stretch what your knowledge base is in regards to the money talks, right? I like that you brought up, again, that word's going to come up a lot in our conversation, is the word conversation, right?
Yes.
You must have conversations. So what's key to that, though? When you were saying you were talking with people at a call center, you were talking to people that, and they would share their situations, you'd go do the research. The biggest thing is that people don't realize you need to be what? Listening more than you're talking.
Listening when you're on those conversations with people. When I was working in the call center at a credit union, listening was the biggest thing, because they could call in and say a couple words and I would know their issue because I just saw it so much. But if I just jumped right to it, they get upset, they get like frustrated, they don't want to talk with me. So like, if you're trying to have money conversations with people, like, listen to their advice, but also if people are telling you something with money, give them a chance to tell their whole story, because there's always going to be something unique in there that's going to unlock something for them.
I like you say that, unique, because like our fingerprints, we're all unique. And so many people, you know, especially in not necessarily call centers, but just in positions of, you know, being in contact with people, don't practice the art of connection. They don't practice the art of listening, because there could be a little nuance somewhere. Like you said, listen to their whole story. There could be a nuance in there that could trigger where you're going to be able to be more empathetic. Because especially when you're dealing with people with money, wouldn't you agree empathy is something that is a prerequisite?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, 100%.
So what has been your experiences? Have you because yes, you would listen to podcasts. Is that something that comes natural to you to be, you know, somebody that can hear the tonality of that person when they're talking and decipher it and be able to be empathetic? Or is that something that you've had to practice or read about or watch videos on?
I'd say practice. I worked at the call center for over 2 years. So there was a lot of people that I talked to in that time. So definitely practice to get to a point of empathy. I worked my way up to a tier two supervisor. So I was helping the supervisors and the regular call center agents be able to like pass on that empathy and say, hey, like I know they want some money back and we've given them a bunch of fees back, but hey, it feels like the situation's slightly different. Let's actually dig into it here and not just look at the numbers, because there's something going on that maybe we can connect them with the right resource to help them break out of this habit and things like that. So when you start to notice that there are those little things, that's when you really can make the money talks fun and make those conversations impactful and powerful.
Well, it makes your job better too, though, your career.
Absolutely.
Because mm-hmm. now all of a sudden being impactful and you're just listening to them, you can hear tonality changes. You can hear, if you listen, you can even hear them sigh. Mm-hmm. Or breaths, right? And that is actually energizing, because now you mm-hmm. know you're making a difference. So anybody that's in any form of dealing with communication or relationship building, not just finance, if you're listening to this podcast or watching it, it is your responsibility to be a good listener, understand what makes people tick, because you will get a satisfaction out of that more than you can ever realize. You're mm-hmm. all of a sudden your shift can be done. It's over like yeah. that. And mm-hmm. you didn't, and you sit back and if you feel like you've had a very stressful day and a lot of people are puking on you, you're going to still, even if you get really good at it, have people that are upset, but you'll have less people upset, and you mm-hmm. should see an evolution of your career. Like you said, you know, mm-hmm. within 2 years, you got better at it. You elevated yourself to a different tier level of support.
Mm-hmm.
List goes on. And that has to do with that conversation. But mm-hmm. listening more than you talk, so that it's important that at the end of the day, that person feels that they're important. Because sometimes you're yep. the first person in their day, week, or month that's given to hoots about them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Once they get to that point where they're saying, hey, I want to speak to the supervisor. And then even more fearful is when they're talking to a supervisor and they're like, let me speak to your supervisor. Cause that's when they would get to me. Is those are the people that come in really just fiery and angry. And when you're able to get to the end of those conversations and they're saying, thank you, I appreciate your help, and they mean it, those are the ones, like you said, your time goes by super fast. And those are also the ones where you're able to not only help them, hopefully, I'm sure maybe there were some we had to do more work on, but let's say when you actually are able to help them and you can tell that they're in a better place, those also help you, because one, you feel good because you really helped somebody. But when you're able to have those really tricky conversations, you learn so much on your own of saying, how did they get here? How do I make sure I don't get there? And like I said, that's one of the things I mainly took away, is avoiding those hard financial situations by learning from others' experience. So I had those hard conversations of, hey, like this is the reality that this financial situation has put you in. Like, there's no way your car's going to get repossessed, but let's talk about other things to make sure it doesn't keep going downhill. But then I'm able to look at it when I get done and step back and say, how did they end up there? Was there some lack of customer support at the beginning that the company could address? Or is there something that they didn't recognize initially in their financial situation that kind of started the slow fuse? Did they get in with too big of a car loan? Do they have too big of a monthly payment? Do I want to make sure to avoid that? So when you get to talk to people about money, you get to see the whole gamut of what do you want to avoid and what do you want to mimic and do yourself.
Yeah, the money monsters definitely that people mm-hmm. live with. And a lot of it starts again back to our childhood to adulthood, not understanding, parents not communicating, things being hidden, and understanding that when you go buy a vehicle or you go get a house or any big purchase, that those salespeople, again, some of you listening, watching, I'm not trying to disrespect you, but some of you oversell people, because then you make more because you're commission based. I understand it. I get it. But it also, it's a domino effect. You know, you made something, but you put some pressure on somebody that you haven't found out just because their numbers come back from the credit bureau or they prove, you know, they prove the fact that they can make that payment doesn't mean it's good for them.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that more in a little bit here as the things that I've utilized and see what you utilize in regards to making sure that people understand. As you mentioned, you might say to that person, yes, you're not going to be able to keep your vehicle, but how can we move forward? That's a great way to do it. Empathize with them. That's terrible. You're going to, you know, that you can't afford to pay for that and you're going to lose your vehicle. But how about we work on moving forward instead of dwelling on what you can't control anymore? Right. Mm-hmm. It's all the words. Wordsmithing is so important when you're dealing with people in a sensitive situation. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. My degree is in communications in public relations. And there was a communication theory we learned about called framing. And it's the one that stuck in my mind the longest, like the ability that words have to completely change how people perceive something it's insane. Like once you start learning about it, you're like, wow, that's crazy how much advertising and stuff manipulates people to frame it in a certain light. Like when you look at commercials and you look at the underlying theme that they're portraying, the ability of words to frame our minds around what we want it to think is super interesting. So when you can figure out how to use that towards good and towards framing things to help people move on through hard financial situations, it's really fun when you learn about communication and you can use it like to help people.
Oh, it is. And it's an evolution that go on till the day you take your last breath, mm-hmm. is to learn and to analyze and that person I just spoke to reacted a certain way and have the mm-hmm. courage to say to them, you know what, I just watched your body language change, or I heard your, if it's just a conversation over a phone, I heard your tonality changed. Did I say something that caused that? And be vulnerable yourself to learn. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'd be shocked. People will say, no, it's not about you. I just, it just triggered something in me. And I'm thinking about, and they'll share more with you and you get, and you build a mm-hmm. stronger a bond, a stronger relationship. And that can be utilized. And again, some of the things I'm talking about or Skylar's talking about, isn't just about money. It can be utilized in all aspects mm-hmm. of your life. Framing works. It just does. I completely.
Yeah. And I was going to, my mind went towards conversations in a marriage, which maybe we don't need to get into in specific, but like the ability to recognize body language changes, like you just said, or over the phone, like to say, hey, I could the way I just said that, or I explained X financial situation, I could tell something didn't stick. Like your voice still sounds slightly unsure. What questions do you have? Like being able to recognize that allows you to just keep moving forward and helping people.
Well, and that gap, there can be a gap of mm-hmm. silence. That can be your answer right there. Or mm-hmm. understanding that, you know, obviously working in a call center, you don't have a choice, but myself in my career, if I have something that's going on that's happened and I have an appointment 3-4 hours later and my mindset's going to not be 100% dedicated to the person that I'm having that call with, or 100% dedicated to having to go see a client, like, you know, mm-hmm. I still go out and see clients at their homes or resident, pardon me, at their businesses, or we'll meet up for a coffee to have that conversation. I need to be cognizant of who I am to ensure I'm doing the right things and saying the right things. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, you got to be aware. The mindset thing is huge. Like you said, if you're not in a place to have healthy money conversations, then maybe don't force your hand of trying to get out of all your credit card debt if maybe there's something else you need to do to get yourself in a little bit of a better position. And one of the things that I think, a headspace that I often think people find themselves in, is embarrassment. They're unsure what to do, so they don't want to ask. And one of my favorite suggestions for that is to pose a different financial situation to somebody that's not your own. And that'll kind of help you break the ice of how are they going to react? Are they going to react in a really negative way, so I don't want to share my issue with them? Or are they going to react really positively, and that'll open us up to be more vulnerable with each other? So let's say you're in a ton of credit card debt, right? And you don't want to share that because you're going to end up sharing the number and people are going to be laughing at you or whatever. How'd you get in that much credit card debt? So you're worried about that. Even though they may not act like that, you're always worried. It's in the back of your mind. So my suggestion is to either listen to some podcast where someone asks a question, take that person's financial situation and ask it to your friends. Be like, hey, I heard this on this YouTube show today. What do you think about this situation this person found themselves in? And then you can kind of warm yourself up to be able to ask tough financial questions and overcome that speed bump of maybe some embarrassment in your mind by kind of piloting it with someone else's financial situation.
Well, it's true. I do that myself all the time. 100% agree with you. And you don't have to share private information. You share the generalities of what that circumstance was. Jane, John, this is what I've found. I've had other clients that have gone through this, or I'll use my own circumstance. Always make sure you're genuine though, because being genuine comes across in your body language of your face to face, or on a video or whatever, and even in your tonality, that affects it. Just be genuine and say, this is what I've found. This is what I experienced. Oh, you know what, John and Sally, back 10 years ago, I went through a similar circumstance with credit card debt, and I didn't know how to get out of it. I was embarrassed to talk to other people, even if they don't say the word embarrassed. Use that on yourself. It can be a depressurization. It's like letting air out of a tire. Right. It literally can make a huge difference. And we've beaten this to death in some ways, but I'll never stop talking about the fact that it is your responsibility when you're dealing with other humans to put in the effort to make sure you get the best out of them in regards to sharing. Because you leave stuff on the table, they can suffer longer, or they could decide not to do anything and then suffer forever and never trust to talk to anybody again. Right. I deal with that with people in financial all the time. They'll family or friends or another business person will say, you need to talk to Dwight. Oh no, I've had this experience and that experience. Oh, that's not what we've had. Give it a shot. Sometimes though, it's damaging because there's people out there that are always transactional based and they're not about the human condition, and then they're transactional at the end. Right? So one of the go on. You have something to say?
I was gonna say, I was just gonna reemphasize word choice being so important there. As you were talking, I thought, like, if someone comes to you with that tricky financial situation and you chuckle at the beginning, like, that's something you got to be careful of because maybe they are trying to open up and get some real help. And if you maybe laugh at the notion that they're in credit card debt, you're like, how are you in credit card debt? You're only 22. Like you haven't lived life yet. Like all we have is student loan. That's really the only thing that's okay. So you got to be careful
You don't need to
with
be their
how you
parent.
present.
You don't need to be their buddy or their parent or be judgmental, shake your finger at them. You need to be somebody that's learns and practices body language, right? You need to learn to literally have a poker face when people say things to you that are uncomfortable in any circumstance in life. Again, not just finance. You will live a healthy, more purposeful life when you learn to let people share and not show, your disdain or your shock through your body or your tone, right? Just work on it, people.
Absolutely.
Skyler, the lack of talking about money as adults is a learned childhood behavior for many from their family, right? As we alluded to earlier. The issue is money struggles are not spoken of. They're hidden. That's money is spent that should not be spent many times due to the family not having an active budget. And I'm a budget, I consider myself the budget king. I do workshops on it. I talk to people about it. My kids, it drove them freaking crazy about it, talking to them about needs and wants and most people don't even understand the difference between a needs and a wants. What are your thoughts on teaching children about budgeting at an early age and knowing the difference between needs and wants?
Yeah, well, you're speaking my language around budgeting. I love it. I got all the spreadsheets. I think we're going on 5 years of my spreadsheet, so it's got a lot of data in there. But teaching kids, I heard on my podcast, oh, it was years ago, someone shared this fantastic idea that stuck with me since. My wife and I don't have kids right now, but this is something that I regularly think about because I think it's a great idea of giving your kids control of a certain segment of the budget. So my guest, I can't remember her name because it was so long ago, she explained that she will give her kids the one kid will have the budget for snacks in the month of June, and it's their responsibility to either spend it all at the beginning of the month as soon as they want snacks, or to figure out how to spread it out so that everyone can get snacks at the gas station on the walk home from the park or something like that. Like that's their budget to manage, and they get given that one budget. And I've also heard the idea of let them make mistakes. So like if they do want to spend the entire snack budget in one trip to the gas station, they're buying every candy bar, every Slurpee, all those sort of things. And one, they'll be sick later, but that's a different conversation. But let them spend all the money, even though you know it's not going to be fun come the last day of the month and they can't get an ice cream cone. But it's easier to teach those challenges and teach through those conversations when it's $150 versus a $50,000 car that they bought that they shouldn't have. So I really like that idea. It's always stuck with me to let children, when they're able to, handle a certain category of the budget.
That makes sense. I know myself, there's lots of people, they'll give allowance to their kids for doing chores or do whatever. And that's their money to spend whatever. But maybe if they took that to the next level and said, okay, you're going to do these chores around the house and here's your allowance for the month. That's going to last the whole month, but it also has to start paying for things that I used to pay for because you've earned that money and you need to start taking responsibility. So if you end up not having that money, I'm not paying for it anymore. And you're going to go another three weeks without it till you earn your next allowance or whatever. There's so many creative ways that we can do it. But anyway, I just thought about that. You know, myself, I didn't give an allowance to my kids. My kids would do things. Okay, we're going to do this. You need to earn some money. What can we do? Okay, well, here's this chore. Here's that chore. This is what you're going to earn. And I put a dollar value to it. And we'll put it into a specific baggie until they got to a certain age. I'd have these little Ziploc bags with their name on it. And okay, you were in this $10. What are you saving for again? Rollerblades. What are you saving for again? Oh, we're going on holidays in a few months. And I want to have spending money, because I used to tell them, and it would drive people crazy. How can you do that to your kid? You're on holidays and holidays. And well, three of them worked hard and saved. The other two didn't. They blew it all. So why should I? What am I teaching them by giving them money to go buy that when the other kids, and what am I teaching those other kids for putting in the stick-to-itiveness to save, to work hard, right? And I did. There was times where I've saved $10 only and we're gone for 2 weeks and this kid's got a couple hundred dollars. Well, guess what? The kid that's got a couple hundred dollars gets this, gets that.
Have way more fun, yeah.
And it's a life lesson, right?
And
harsh life lesson.
From that triggered a memory in my mind of going to Disneyland as a kid, and same sort of thing. We were allowed to save whatever money we wanted to bring. And I brought, so that was where like the saver in me came out. I brought so much money to Disneyland and I bought myself the toy monorail that they had there. And my parents, thankfully, they probably paid some fee to fly it back. I'm sure some carry-on charge for me, but that toy was one of the most valuable ones I had because I paid for it myself. I really saved up. It was my awesome Disneyland purchase. And like you said, your kids that take all the money probably valued what they got with it a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely. It was always interesting. Like I remember one of my kids was saving for rollerblades, right? And when they finally accomplished it, they weren't that short. They were maybe $20 or $30 short, but I was so impressed by them that I wanted to also teach them that sometimes in life, people will reward you for being a hard worker, for being somebody that sticks to their guns. And they come to me and, you know, Dad, what do we have? Bring the baggie down. They're about $30. They weren't sad. They didn't get upset. They just said, okay. And I thought about it. I was sitting there, what lesson can I teach them? So I called them later on and I said to them, you know, so this is what you've done so far. Tomorrow, we're going to go get your rollerblades. Or it could have been roller skates or whatever. And well, I'm still short $30. That's okay. Because you've stuck to your guns, you've never given me any grief for chores you had to do or anything that extra that I asked and you never got paid for, you've earned it. This is your bonus from Dad because you really tried really hard. We went out and got the skates. Guess what? Did it change them? Yeah, it did, because they stuck on a path of always giving that extra effort. Not expecting me to do that because I didn't have to do it again. They just stuck on that path, but they also realize that sometimes extra effort, extra hard work, and there's bonuses in life, right?
Yeah, that's an awesome lesson. That's the kind of thing that excites me about whenever my wife and I do have kids, is just the teaching those lessons just sounds so fun. Like when you were talking about when we were talking about teaching kids budgeting and things like that, one of the things you mentioned is there's so many ways that you can do it. Like you had Ziploc bags. People maybe have an app in order because they're younger parents, like my generation, we're teaching them all digital and stuff like that. Like there's so many different ways to teach money. That's what's so fun about it. Like you get those lessons and then it clicks. I'm sure that's just awesome to see.
Oh yeah, it is. And again, back when they were young, yeah, there was no smartphones, right? They're all adults now, but there was literally at that time I had budgets, and we'd spreadsheet budget, and we'd talk about money, and they used to go crazy because, "Dad, we need this and this and this and that. Is that a need or a want?" Well, months later, years later, and they'd ask me about something, and I'd turn to look at them. And they go, "Yeah, okay, we know that's not a need." And they'd walk away, right? And as adults, have they all learned everything that I taught them? No. Everybody's unique, like their fingerprints. But or I'd say to them, "Okay, let's look at the budget. See this month here? What does it say there?" "Well, that's a negative. What's that?" "Well, it's because we have all these extra expenses that have come due that normally we don't have because, let's say, it's back to school or whatever, and the income coming in is short." I'd explain that to him. So, unfortunately, unless it's a need, we just can't do it. But it's a want that is important because maybe it's something for their extracurricular that they'd like to make it more effective or more enjoyable. I'll say, "Let's look, where can we move this to?" Right? This month here, I have a little bit of room for some wants. So let's do it. Right? Just having those conversations is so important, right?
Yeah, and I think when you sit down and lay down the expectation of, hey, we can get that, we can get that want, but not right now. Then you're extremely looking forward to November after, well, I guess November is a bad time because that's probably Christmas shopping, but
Yeah.
March or
Yeah,
something like
whatever
that.
month. Yeah, we get that.
Yeah, you're looking forward to it because you can say, okay, we can do it down the road. And that's the real like control and the ultimate freedom you get from being disciplined with your budget. One of my previous guests used the phrase, discipline is freedom. And I think that especially goes in hand with our money. If we're disciplined about how we're managing it and if we're disciplined in terms of staying on top of it, you're going to be able to spend on that trip. Like my wife and I recently, we went to Tampa for a business trip for my day job, and we managed to make a day to go up to Orlando to go to Disney World. And because we saved for our vacations just kind of as we're going, we knew, hey, we're going to have enough money to make this trip work. And it was spontaneous, which is so unlike us. We love to do our research and things like that. But because we're diligent and disciplined, we're able to say, yeah, let's do it. And it was one of the funnest days we've had. It was such a great time.
Oh yeah, that's what I was at an appointment yesterday with a client that's in the medical industry, and we were talking about it, and he's very frugal and he loves traveling. He's in his 50s and he'll travel on his own, and he stays in hostels to save money and stuff. And I pointed something out to him, and I says, "Well, if we do this and that, you're gonna have an extra few thousand dollars when you go on your trip this year. Can you imagine what maybe you splurge and stay in a hotel with a pool? Maybe you do this and do that." And he goes, "Oh, I like the option that I could splurge. I'm not gonna." Right? He's
Yeah,
so
it's there though. Yeah.
stuck in that dedicated mindset. But he did. He smiled. He says, "I appreciate that, the thought process that we're discussing." We always have great meetings together, him and I. We become friends a long time ago. Like, literally, it's going to be 20 years coming up here that we've
Nice.
developed a relationship as a client, and he's beyond that. We go to hockey games together, we hang out. He's a great guy. But you know what? And one of the things that you talk about, people have been in your podcast. I had somebody on my podcast that we talked about finance, we talked about nutrition and how it all ties together. Well, why do we have nutritional lifestyles? Why do we go on diets? Right? We're trying to trim things. We're trying to feel differently and feel better. Well, a budget is a diet for your finance. It really is. It literally, people say, "Well, budgeting's painful." No, it's not. Wouldn't you rather know that you're going to have, you don't, that you're not going to have a month where you have more days than you have money? Wouldn't you rather live a life? And I'm not saying that even in my life, there's times where, because I make commission, where it'll be a month where a bunch of things are due quarterly or bi-yearly or yearly, annually that come up that are in my budget. And that month, I just, the prior month, I had a slow month and didn't have as much commission. So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank goodness the month before was really good and I had some extra and that extra has been, is funneled so that I can still take care of this. Right. Does that make sense? And people just don't realize how cathartic a budget is. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I've talked about budgeting. I don't talk about a lot of my podcasts because my guests are from all walks of life. I don't have just people on for finance. Give a Heck is the brand, is people that have, they can do anything. They've accomplished life. They've gone through the school of hard knocks and now they're out educating and teaching others. That's the basis of my show. So those listening or watching, if you're a new listener, you know, budgeting is good. Reach out to Skylar or myself. Yeah. It could be something that could really change your life. It can really help you pivot. And it's a great tool to help for debt roll up. It's a great tool to do. As you mentioned, your wife and you saved money and you got to have that bonus round on your holidays to Tampa.
Yeah.
Right. Without budgeting, you're just freewheeling on the hamster wheel. You're just on a hamster wheel. Right. Then, you're going to go do it anyway. And guess what? Credit card, overdraft, debt, line of credit. Mm-hmm. Now you're paying interest to make somebody else wealthy. That should irritate.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts when people, because I think like thinking about how people's body language change, you mentioned the word budget and some people like cower at it. How do you teach when people maybe don't want a budget? Because I love even just the idea of tracking expenses, but what do you think about that?
Well, you know, that's a great question. In 21 years, I have talked to so many people and we've done so much about budgeting and those that cower from it. I'll ask them questions. You know, I noticed your body language changed or your tonality, or you'll outright verbally said, no, I'm not doing budgeting. That sucks. I'll say to them, why? Like, I'll say, you know, I'm really trying to understand. I'm trying to further my knowledge base and understanding why people don't like budgeting. I've heard many different reasons, but what is your reason? What's your, and I'll use the words, what's been your money monster? What has been your education around budgeting that makes you feel that way? And I'll shut up. Guess what?
Yeah,
the first person that answers, in some regards, people don't understand. It sounds harsh, but they lose. What they lose is they lose the fact that they've lost their shield, their harshness into it. And they're finally being able to release why they don't like budgeting. Maybe they've never thought about it. And I've had some people say to me, well, you know, I've never thought about that. That's a great question. Let me think about that for a second. Okay. I'll sit there. I'll acknowledge them. Okay. And I'll wait until that uncomfortableness can be that barrier, that shield that needs to drop so that they can share with me. Well, when I was a child, my parents, this happened. It always goes back to that origin. That origin is so important. And once you get past and down to that origin and we have that conversation, that next, you'd be shocked, that next appointment, right? We're budgeting. This is about a month ago, sat down with a doctor and his girlfriend. Body language about budgeting. And all of a sudden, and I did that. I went, oh, that's unfortunate. You feel that way. My next question for you would be, what happened in your life? What's the knowledge that you learned from your family, from people around you? What's your money monster that caused you to think that budgeting's terrible? And I shut up. First he shared, then she shared, and their stories are both different. They're both unique, right? She says to me, actually, I really don't have much problems with budgeting. It's because she'd been with him for quite a few years. So all of a sudden, we adapt to the circumstances we're around. So we found out, and the discussion was great. The next Sunday, they came over. We booked an appointment. We've had two different appointments where we've worked through their detailed budgeting. And now I'm going to take that to one level and help him with his business budget and help him understand more detail than that. But he had never done a budget in his life, right? In his early 30s, she had never done it either. And it's the light bulb moments when you're doing budgeting with people is amazing. right? They, even people that have make hundreds of thousands of dollars and have tons of money, and they'll agree to budget with me, even though they don't seem to have any apprehensive toward money and the lack of it. The light bulb effect when you go through every single thing, because I'll say, what do you think should be on the budget? And they'll tell me, we'll go through and all, and okay, we got to the bottom. What about this, and that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, never thought about that. Click, 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 click. All of a sudden at the bottom, my spreadsheet that I've been using for 21 years has the total of their expenses. At the top, it has their income, right? All sources of income. And then it has a pie chart and there's graphs to shock them, right? And they'll see, oh my gosh, I spend that amount?
Yeah.
Right? Yes, they might have an extra 1,000, maybe an extra 100. But they don't realize because that budget, now we go through and we discuss, well, we want to free up some money and do this. What do we do? Okay, let's go through and figure out what's a need and a want, right? But it all starts at that origin story and finding out, right? And does it work 100% of the time? About 70% of the time, you break down that barrier and people want a budget. It's just by having that genuine conversation and caring what caused them to fear that budget.
Yeah, I like the idea of starting it with an origin story. I also think for me, one of the ways I like to prime people on the conversation for budgeting is tracking their expenses, because so many people use a credit union or a bank that has an app that is tracking all their spending. And if they just pull that up and say, hey, here's how much I'm spending on my phone or on my app that says it's going towards fast food, that number will, like, 99% of the time shock people because they don't realize how expensive it is or things like that. And I think that's something that can kind of move people to say, wow, that number's just got to come down regardless of whether I budget or not. And that almost primes people for a financial conversation, in my experience, to say,
it does.
Wow, that's not what I expected.
Yeah. And it, you know, I have a workshop series I've been doing for 21 years is how to increase cash flow and manage debt. One of the slides in there that we discuss is a breakdown of all the expenses that people have. And one of them is, how often do you go out for coffee? How often do you eat out? Meanwhile, I've done massive goal setting with them, and they want to get out of debt. They want to save for cash-based vacations. They want to save for retirement. And their budget shows they have nothing to do that. And I'll say to them, well, we can free that up money. Oh, that's impossible. We've tried. Well, yes, based on their knowledge, they've tried. But then we start having conversations. I'll say, you know, you cook at home lots. Oh, yeah. Well, could you make extra and have leftovers?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes. Well, how about you make, you know, 30% more than you'd normally make so that the next day you can take, you know, you want to eat out 2 days a week, or make it Friday a special day, right? Or whatever day of the week you want, where you only eat out once and the other 4 days you bring food. All of a sudden now, instead of spending $20 a day on coffee and eating out, right, 5 days a week, that's $100. If you can cut off 4 days of that, you just freed yourself up $80. Oh,
yeah.
And I look at the budget and I look at their goals and, oh, wow, that $80 could go toward this. What else? And people get excited. You'd be, if people listening, yes. People get excited. Now they're looking, now they're more aware, and they want to figure out their budget even more and break it down, right? And it's just crazy, because I'm a budget freak when it comes to that. And they'll say to me, what else can we do? Oh, I see you have a cell phone. How much do you spend every month? What do you get? Do you actually use that much data? Not really. Well, then what packages do they have? And, right? Pull up the computer.
Yeah, my wife and I.
Right? And all of a sudden now they're getting a $40 package. And, yeah. All of a sudden they'll go from a $40 or $100 package down to a $25 or $30 package.
Yeah. Ooh, every month too.
Yeah. That's $50. That's $600 a year. Wow. That's awesome. Right? And I'll say that to them. Look at that. All of a sudden we freed up money because they're not eating out or getting coffee as much. Now we're freed up money on their cell phone. Then I'll talk to them about their streaming services too. I'm serious. Like, we get into those discussions and people really, those that are listening, watching, it's very cathartic and it's exciting for me. I leave those appointments and I'm just energized, right? Because I've made a difference. They're energized because they can see a light at the end of the tunnel for once.
Yeah, I have a segment called The Handy Hint where I talked about subscriptions recently on my show, and I said, just turn off auto renewal. That's enough. Because if you get to that point where it would have renewed and it cancels itself, you're instantly going to know if you need it or not. Because if you go 2 or 3 months and you load it up and you're like, oh, when did this stop working? You saved yourself 2 or 3 months of payments. Just turn off auto renewal. That's where those subscription companies make their money,
Oh,
is just
absolutely.
letting it go and go and go. So if you just every time you would then have to go manually pay it. So you can tell yourself, hey, do I have the $120? This is going to be a year over 12 months. If you don't have it, then don't renew it. But you can also then sit down and say, hey, do we need it next time? Because it's going to stop itself. Like turning off auto renewal is a big one.
Oh, yeah, and I love the ones where you get an email or you reach out to them and you'll or it'll pop up with a window when you're about to cancel something. If you cancel this and you decide to change it later, it's going to cost more, right? Because you're at a grandfathered price, or maybe when you signed up with it, it was a special offer. It's all, I see it all the time, right? And I'll tell people it's all designed to keep you trapped.
Yeah, just break through it. You'll be fine, especially because you're going to save that difference by not spending on it in the first place.
Well,
And they're
even
always going to welcome you
$10,
back.
yeah, even $10, 120 bucks a year, like it adds up, right?
And they're always going to welcome you back. Like the whole shop your insurances because they're always going to offer you some promo rate to switch or so. Like you gotta take your own control, like take it into your own control and not just go by, hey, if you stay with us, thanks for being a loyal customer. Here's nothing. Like you gotta take your control of the way you're spending your money on those subscriptions and stuff.
Well, and you'd be shocked how many cable companies or satellite companies or cell phone companies, when you say, well, you'll contact them, whether it's chat or it's on the phone, and you say to them, can I speak to somebody in your customer retention department? And people say to me, well, what? You have a customer retention department. I know you do. Well, most people don't even ask for that. We only utilize that for people that are really hot and bothered. Well, I'm not hot and bothered. I just want to talk to your customer
I just want to
retention
save some
department.
money.
Yeah. Oh, and they'll bring on, and I'll, oh, you got to wait on hold, or they'll get somebody to call me back. I've done it for clients and they're shocked. All of a sudden, oh, you're a loyal customer. We'll give you $100 off for a year, or we'll give you an extra $5 off. And they're shocked. That's how
Yeah, it's
easy it
easy.
can be to free up money. It's just by opening your mouth and removing all doubt, all right, that you care about your financial circumstances.
Sometimes you got to be willing to move though. Like we just switched internet providers and our new one's given us a $100 credit after a month or something like that. But our previous one was calling and calling, and we made the firm decision to change because it was cheaper overall and there was that nice bonus. But they will keep coming after you to keep you there. Like I was getting phone calls. Like, I think a week after or 2 weeks after I said, no, we're done. And they're like, I just wanted to go over what made you decide to leave. And I'm sure it would have led to a conversation of, well, here's this promo we can offer you. Like, there's places to save money. You just got to put in that little bit of effort. And maybe once every couple of days, you call them to see what they can do for you.
Well, and it's true. Like I recently, I with my internet provider, cable provider, they allow you to sign a 2 year contract to get cheaper rates, and it came up in February, and it was literally $30 more than 2 years prior, right? So I'm chatting away with them, and I said, okay, well, I think I'm gonna check out other people that offer services, and I had already done it. I'm a finance guy. I checked it out before I even challenged them, but I think I'm gonna check out some other things. Oh, well, let me check. You know what? Because you've been a loyal customer and with us for X amount of period of time, we're gonna give you $100 off your bill right now. Okay, sure. That's fantastic. Oh, by the way, I see that you're on auto withdraw. I'm gonna give you another $5 for that. And I
Just
go,
ask,
oh,
yeah.
wow. Oh, so that's great. And she goes, well, I also see that because they've gotten bought out by another company last year. I also see that you have this as your cell phone provider. We have an agreement with them now. That's going to get you another $5 off a month, right? All because I asked. They're not going to reach out to you and send you an email saying, or
Here's your
advertise,
$150.
here, we're going to give you all this money, right? That's not the way they work. right? I also tell my clients, like in Canada, every 30 days, you can legally change your cell phone package. They can't put you into a contract on that side. They can put it on your phone that you owe on this phone because you couldn't afford it. On the cell phone side, every 30 days, they have to allow you to change it. I was talking to a client yesterday. They hadn't changed theirs in years. And I said, how much are you paying? They told me the cost on the what they're paying. And I said, you need to contact that company. I said, what do you mean? I says, I happen to know. I just sat with another client that's with that company. They're paying about a third of what you're paying. A third.
Same company, yeah. Wow.
Same company. I said, yeah, because the plans change. It's not their, they don't have a legal responsibility to reach out to you and say, hey, if you have this package, here's a new price. No.
Yeah.
Don't
They'll
have
let you
to.
Keep going.
They'll let you keep paying. They're hoping that you stay ignorant, right?
Yeah.
So I love it.
Yeah. Simple reminders to check it quarterly, check it every 6 months or something like that. And just challenge them. Be like, hey, what do you got?
I personally check every month because it's not hard.
Yeah.
It's
no,
not
it's easy.
Hard.
It's a simple chat or an email message.
Oh yeah. Like literally I went and checked here last, I can't even remember. Was it last fall? And I got tied up on it. My son asked me, I says, well, you check and get back to me. So he reached out to the cell phone company or the same company. He got a hold of me. He says, hey, Dad, they have a promotion on right now. And you're paying this amount. And it's now this amount. It was 50% different. 50%. And it was only a 3 day or 2 day thing. Right. I said, perfect.
Yeah.
So I quickly contacted him when I had a break. Right. And now I'm paying half of what I was paying before. Right. I went online and looked.
Yeah.
It's back up to what I was paying.
Wow. Little effort and those conversations go a long way.
Yeah, and my son, I've been teaching him and programming him, I guess, right? Always ask. You don't get if you don't ask. I don't care what it is, right? You don't get if you don't ask. The worst you're going to hear is no. No is not, doesn't mean forever. It means today, right now.
Yeah.
Tomorrow could be yes.
I love it. Yeah. You gotta save money where you can, talk to people, ask questions. Be willing to ask those questions. Like there's Facebook groups for every town in America and Canada, I'm sure. Like ask on there, be like, hey, what internet providers is everyone having? What are you paying? Because you're probably going to help multiple people when the one person comments and says, I'm paying $20 a month for my internet and everyone else is paying 50 to 150. And that one person's going to help everybody out. So just be willing to have questions, ask questions and have conversations.
And share. Right. Yeah. So Skylar, what is your approach to starting that finance conversation about money with adults when they reach out to you or you're just in a coffee conversation, you know, they're so that their children and them can look forward to a better future?
Yeah. One of the questions that stuck with me recently that I've started asking a lot is how did your view on money as a child impact you now? Or how did your parents' view on money impact how you handle money now? And that always brings people back to one of those, like it's similar to your origin story question of how did you get started with money? And I've heard some crazy conversations. One guest shared how after his dad had left the family, his mom made him feel like he had to provide for everybody. So that caused him to spend all of his money so that he could honestly tell her, no, I don't have anything to help out pay for the bills and things like that. When maybe that wasn't the real expectation, but that was just the way he had felt as a kid. So it caused him to drive him to become a big spender and things like that. Like those little things that impact us when we're young can have these like outsized impacts. So it's always a fun place for me to start is to say, hey, how did you handle money as a kid? Or how did you see money modeled to you when you were a child?
I like that. Those are great questions, right?
Yeah.
You know, it is so simple. Even I can simplify just through what you were saying to get there. And if it doesn't work, then you can always get better. We can delve into things more. But sometimes for some people, it's just a simple little question, right? What was your experiences as a child with money?
Yeah. Was it hearing your parents fight continually? So you're afraid to have a money conversation because you're worried it's going to blow up. Was it that your parents were super wealthy? So you think you can spend all your money and there's no work required. Like the way you saw money as a kid is so impactful on the way you handle it now.
Huge. The origin is so important. Like I've sat with people that are so excessively in debt and their parents were wealthy, but they never ever sat even as adults and thought, what effort did my mom and dad have to do to get that wealth? What were their school of hard knocks? What were their trials and tribulations? Did they actually earn and work for that money? Or did they get a big inheritance? Because even families don't share that they're getting that they got a big inheritance. And their parents, some of those parents, you find out they've blown a lot of it and they're running in debt themselves, but now they're living in a facade and their kids as adults still see that facade. So they want to live and impress their parents or they want to impress their friends. And they live
they
a
don't
life
have the money and
they live a life that's a house of cards. It's really scary, actually.
Yeah.
So, Skylar, what would be the top three things that need to be addressed with individuals when talking about their finances?
Wow, yeah, that's a big one. When talking about your finances, I would almost say like a good question to ask is how do we want to talk about money? Like it seems kind of, maybe it seems a little silly to approach how do you want to talk about it, but I think setting that foundation is essential. It's like, do we want to have a weekly money meeting? Do we want to have a monthly? Is it too stressful for one of us to talk about it that often? Like one thing that kind of a question brought for me and my wife is understanding I can talk about money all day, and that would lead to me bombarding my wife with, hey, let's invest in this. Let's look at this option. Like let's do these sort of things. And it's turned into we got to have an agenda. Like that's just the way we have to work. I have to put it down somewhere, not ask about it. We'll talk about it when it comes up at our monthly budget meeting. And that's time that we've dedicated to it. But setting the foundation of how we're going to talk about it, I would say, is a great first thing. And I love, as a second one, inviting people to dream and to look to the future. It goes back to that, the conversations at the credit union of here's what's out of our control and what's going to happen. Let's look at what's in our control in the future and what do we want to do with it? So especially in a marriage, saying, hey, do we want to travel a lot? Do we not want to travel at all, but we want to have a very nice place that family can come and gather? And yeah, that's a fun one to get going down, is letting people dream and imagine what they want to do with their money. And third, I would say having a realistic expectation of how debt is going to play a role in your life, because some people can be afraid of it. They don't sleep at night when they think of it, things like that. And some people are so careless, I guess, like they don't have any sort of risk factor when it comes to the impact that debt can play on your life. And once you have an understanding of that, then I think you can move forward, because debt's also just like money's going to have an impact. So is debt, because there's always going to be something in someone's life that they have to use debt either to help them, or maybe they truly can't afford something right now. And you got to look at how debt is going to impact you. So understanding your relationship with debt, making sure there's a money foundation, and then dreaming together, I would say, are some main things.
I love that. Good versus bad debt, because there is good debt. Unfortunately, people get inundated with people like a Dave Ramsey. No, again, no offense to him. He, all debt's bad. No, it's not. It's not all bad, right? There's some really, again, is everybody able to use debt in a good way? No, they aren't, right? Only specific portions of the population. Everybody's got their rhymes and reasons why debt can be good for them. And I educate them, right? Depending on what their circumstances are. I love that when you talk about dream, looking to the future. That's what I do with goal setting. My goal setting sheet has today, it has short term, and it has long term. Right. So they might be, their short term dream would be to get out of debt. Well, and then the next one might be have a paid vacation, you know, be able to take a paid vacation, or they might have retire. Well, there's all different circumstances, and that's dreaming with them. So I love that. Right. Yeah. I don't call it, I instead of calling it a goal list, I'll start changing it to a dream list.
Yeah, there you go. It puts people in a different mindset too when you think of the word dream. Yeah,
words. I like that. Perfect. Yeah. Like I said, there's always things we can learn from one another, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Always things, the conversations, like we've said that word, that you need a conversation counter in like the corner of the video. Many times have we said it, but
couple hundred, been a lot. Couple hundred, maybe?
Yeah. Maybe 1,000.
yeah, I agree. 100%. So we're gonna this is the last question I'm going to ask you in regards to, you know, the finance portion of it. I know you believe financial independence can be had by all, and so do I, right? Do you believe there's something that could be done at a high school level to combat the problem of financial ignorance? And if so, what would you think should be implemented?
Yeah, I think compound interest, I think, is such an eye-opening element of personal finance. When you show people Like the story that comes right to my mind is the Money Guy show. He talks about how he was told as a kid that $100 a month or something, I can't remember it, but like $100 now will turn into $1 million later. Like that is so eye-opening if you can really nail that principle of, hey, if your money is working in the right direction at 16, you're going to be infinitely more wealthy than if you start at even 20. Like the difference between time. So yeah, I guess let's get back to time then. Like the impact that time has on your money, and if you can just start making those good decisions sooner, you're going to be so much better off way earlier. And even then further down the road, you're going to be able to do whatever you really want if you can get started early.
Yeah, compound interest, the rule of 72 is something they should start teaching people in like grade 9, grade 10,
Yeah,
right?
your Algebra 1 class should have the rule of 72 in it.
Yeah, and you know, it is such a powerful thing, the high cost of waiting. And yes, there's circumstances that happen. Those people that are listening to this, there's circumstances that happen. I get it, right? That stop you or slow you down, but understanding that maybe in those years where you don't have kids, you're using compound interest of the rule of 72 of how money doubles. We won't get into that, but people, you can Google the rule of 72. It is so straightforward, it's easy. Young kids understand it. But if you could start before you have kids, where you have that controlled budget, where you that's part of it, and you're saving 10 to 20% of your income, your net income. And then living your budget lives off the rest, your life will be so much more fulfilled. And then when you start having kids, yes, you're going to have additional expenses, but you've already started that locomotive going, that perpetual motion of compound interest towards your future.
Compound interest is a huge thing. Once people realize, hey, this money that is in credit card debt is working the wrong way, and when you can flip that towards going the right way, and you see, like, I think now my wife and I have been investing for a few years, so those dividend payments, while they aren't massive, to tell her, hey, we made a hundred and something dollars or whatever the number might be just by letting the money sit there, that's so cool to see. Like once that clicks, that's so fun.
Well, yeah, and people don't understand dividend investing. And again, we can, you know, if I have the hopefully have the pleasure of being on your show, we can talk about some of this stuff. Like people don't understand compound interest. They don't understand dividend investing. They don't understand dollar cost averaging and the power of it, because I have that as a in one of my workshops too, and on accumulation of wealth and the little things that you can do differently, right? Simple things. And like in North America, people, if they dollar cost average when they do monthly investing out of their bank account, that 10% or 20% or whatever dollar value is comfortable for them, they literally are going to amass over a lifetime, they can amass as much as 30% more than somebody that just does a lump sum payment. They don't understand the value of how investing changes on a monthly basis and how you get more or less. Again, for those listening, reach out to one of us if you want to understand dollar cost averaging or dividends. We're more than happy to help you.
Always, yes.
Right? Because at the end of the day, you help one, you help many. I'm always looking to help one, the needs of the one, because I know if I help the needs of the one properly, they're going to share that information and it's going to spread out like a spider web.
Yeah, those little money talks go a long way. You share it with one person, they go have a money talk with someone else, and it just grows.
Oh, absolutely. So, Skylar, if you had to give our listeners one last closing message, what would you tell them in regards to giving a heck and never giving up?
Yeah, never give up when it comes to helping people. That's what's coming to my mind is there's definitely people listening that I'm sure resonated a lot with what we're hearing. And they're like, I got to go tell everyone. And hopefully they'll share this episode with them so we can grow your podcast. But never give up in terms of helping people. Always be willing to have the tough conversations. Like we said, control your words, control your body language. Take some of the tips we gave about customer service and things like that and apply them to having conversations on serving others and helping people. Someone on my podcast recently mentioned find your talent and use it in the service of others. So find what connects for you in your mind and use that in the service of others. If someone mentions, oh, you know, interest rates are just so crazy right now, maybe that's a perfect plug to say, hey, well, are you guys looking to buy a house right now? How do you guys save for a down payment? And then maybe, you have some things in the back of your mind you can share, but just get those conversations started and then look for ways to help people.
Yeah, I completely agree. Those tough conversations or listening, as you mentioned, it goes back to the conversation, but it ties to listening. I've gained clients from that, just professionals that I utilize for my own life. And we'll have conversations or they'll say something like you're saying about interest and then ask a follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All of a sudden, I've gained myself a potential client or a guaranteed client, depending on the circumstances. So I love that. Thank you for sharing. Yep. But never give up wanting to help people. Great closing message. So our time thank you. Our time is almost up and I want to respect our listeners and your time. However, before we end, can you please tell the listeners what's the best way they can reach you, Skylar?
Yeah, wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can search Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, YouTube, any platform like that. My website is just skylarfleming.com. Got a contact form on there. That's the easiest way to get in touch with me. You just submit that and I'd be happy to answer any questions. I love doing questions on my podcast and things like that. So go give me a listen over there and then shoot me an email or send me a message on my website.
Sweet. Fantastic. For those that are new to the show, you can go to giveaheck.com, go into the podcast part of the website. You'll see a picture of Skylar along with abbreviated show notes and all the links in it for you to be able to easily access them, as well as his social media as well. So I appreciate you being on, Skylar. Any last final comments before I wrap up the show?
It's been fun. I just hope everyone is able to take something away and go have a money talk about it.
Fantastic. I love that. So again, thanks so much for being on GiveHack. Skylar, I appreciate your time and sharing some of your experiences so that others too can learn. It is never too late to give a heck.
Thank you for taking time out of your day and listening to Give a Heck. If you find value, I'd appreciate you sharing with your friends and family so they too can learn how to live life on purpose, not by accident. So you do not miss the next episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and please also post a review. I look forward to reading your comments. This has been Dwight Heck. If you want to check out other podcast episodes or today's show notes, please check out my website, giveaheck.com. And until next time, together let us all strive to give a heck.